EY.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
David Farrant joins Gene and Chris, talking about his psychic research, mentioning, of course, the Highgate vampire. Now, in a sense of trying to possess something else, David, another person, did they feel that something was taking control of their mind? Why did they feel there was some kind of possession going on, or attempted possession?
We don't know the reason why, Gene. As a psychic investigator, the first thing I always do in cases like this, and there have been many other cases, it's just that that case got, was to get slightly out of hand. But anyway, the first thing we do is to try and find some logical explanation for these sightings. And it's not only in Highgate Cemetery. These have occurred all over the country, not necessarily of the same figure, but similar figures. And often we do find a logical material explanation. They're only too aware of the sort of the power of the human mind, especially on a dark night with shadows blowing in the moonlight and a cold wind blowing. The mind can play tricks on people, and it's very easy to sort of imagine the sort of supernatural entities when, as I said, there might be some not logical explanation for them.
I guess under those circumstances, you're in a cemetery. It's night. Certainly, in your country, it tends to be damp and rainy.
Yeah,
boy, I'd be frightened. I don't care what's there.
Yeah, and also, Highgate Cemetery nowadays, well, then, it was open to the general public in the daytime. That is the hours of day hours. I believe they used to open to about 10 o'clock in the morning, and it used to close when it started to get dark at night, 4 or 5 o'clock. But it was open, and people could wander around the cemetery in daylight hours, and a lot of these sightings actually occurred within Highgate Cemetery before it got dark. There was one man there whose name I interviewed him, and his name was Thornton. He actually had gone into Highgate Cemetery, and it's a beautiful old place, leaving aside the vandalism and all the serious desecration that was going on there at that time. And he got hopelessly lost because the cemetery in those days was very, very overgrown, even the main paths. Sometimes it was difficult to know where you were going, and you could easily wander off a path. And he got sort of lost in the middle of the cemetery. Now, he heard the bell going, because they used to ring this big old Victorian bell at the main gate of the cemetery, and it was a warning for people to leave. They were closing. They used to give them about half an hour to leave the cemetery. And he didn't know where he was, but he thought the best way he could leave was to make his way towards the sound of the bell, which he started to do. And in the clearing, this was somewhere in the north of the cemetery, in a clearing, he was trying to find the main path again. He suddenly froze. He had the overwhelming sensation that there was something behind him, and it stopped him in his tracks, and he swung around, and he saw what he described as a tall, dark figure with hypnotic eyes. He couldn't really make out its face, but he could certainly make out, as he described it, psychic eyes. And he felt it was trying to hypnotize him. And before he even realized what was happening, well, he realized that much, the figure just disappeared. It wasn't there. It's rather as if you're looking at a television picture and all of a sudden someone decides to turn off the screen, it was gone. And he noticed that the whole area turned decidedly colder than it was, and it really freaked him out. And the interesting point is here that man was actually, by profession, he was an accountant. The only reason I mention that is because he'd gone into the cemetery not expecting to see any ghosts or anything, but he worked not far away in Highgate Village, I believe, and he'd gone in there in his sort of late afternoon, and he was really interested in the old Victorian architecture. And if you like, he'd gone there as a sightseer. He wasn't expecting to see this figure. And I went to see this person, and he was absolutely adamant that he described his experience to me, and he said, "Well, I know what I saw, but I really can't believe it. I can't accept it." He'd never believed in ghosts before. As I said, he was an accountant. He was a man far more interested in facts and figures and mathematical equations than that. And he was one of the first people I'd interviewed back in very early 69 or late 68. And his experience convinced me that there was something in all these local stories about a ghost that was haunting Highgate Cemetery. There were other sightings too, and people I went to interview. I've got the names, I put them on record, and I still have them on record somewhere. And it was that which really decided me, or us, to conduct a sort of investigation into these sightings at the cemetery. And that's where all the trouble really started from, because I should add that in December 1969, I actually paid a visit to Highgate Cemetery myself. And again, I was looking for some logical explanation. At that time, you had foxes breeding en masse in Highgate Cemetery, and I thought it could have been an animal that someone had spotted, or I thought, failing that, it could have been the moon casting a shadow in tree branches, which were giving distorted shapes in Swain's Lane. I actually saw this figure myself standing just inside the top gate of Highgate Cemetery, and it appeared to be about 7 feet tall, and it looked like it was wearing some sort of cloak, and it was standing, as I said, just inside the top gate. And
so it was like a shadow person.
I don't know how he described it, but it was so real that at that time, I actually thought it, in the few seconds before, I actually thought it was somebody dressed up who was trying to frighten passers-by, because by this time, December 69, there'd been all these ridiculous stories about the figure could be a vampire because of the hypnotic eyes and all this sort of
stuff. So that's where the vampire thing came to fore here.
That's where it,
sure.
That's where it started.
Okay. It was the hypnotic eyes and possibly the possession, because vampires supposedly hypnotize people and possess them.
Yes.
Look into my eyes.
So strange that you do such a bad accent.
I'm not sure if you were talking to me or Chris then.
No, your accent's great. It's Chris's accent that we have to argue with. But then I can't do any better, so I shouldn't say anything. But the point being is that what it looked like is what it supposedly did is what caused people to think, ah, vampire.
Yeah, that's it exactly, Gene. And what happened was, because of that, local stories started circulating by certain people that it had to be a vampire, and it got more and more exaggerated. And before you knew it, I say relatively harmless phenomenon ghost, had been transformed into this non-existent vampire-like creature. And well, to cut a long story short,
you've been monitoring this case since the late 60s.
Yes.
How many people we're talking 40 plus years, how many people have reported something in Highgate Cemetery that you could lump into a category that might fit this particular aberration? 7 foot tall, cloaked, hypnotic eyes. How many people have actually reported something like that?
It's very difficult to put in actual numbers, and also you have to remember that a lot of the reports we got were not actually of sightings, but they were of people who used to have strange experiences when they walked down Swain's Lane without even going into the cemetery. For example, not only at night, but in the afternoons when they're mobile phones were suddenly explicably cut out, even though the batteries were fully charged. The same thing would happen with old cameras. People went there with cameras and the batteries were fully charged, and other people reported sensing a dark cloud all around the top gate in Highgate Cemetery. Many people reported having a sense of time.
We'll go into the time and all the other stuff with David Ferrant and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorney. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can! It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info. Or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com. Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
For a long time, you've heard me talk about building your own food supply with eFoods Direct. As a listener, you know why you need to have a supply of the best storable food on the planet. Every day, we document the attempts to take control of our lives. But there's one thing we can all control. Your greatest dependency, food. eFoods Direct products are made with only the best ingredients and none of the trash and contaminants like trans fats, GMOs, or MSG. This food is nutrient dense and tastes great. It's simple to make, portable, and has a shelf life of up to 25 years. Now with eFoods Direct, you'll get the most affordable, best tasting food you can buy. And the new products and pricing will blow you away. Compared to other food sources, including home cooked meals, you can cut your food cost in half. You just can't afford to ignore this. Call 800-409-5633. Or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for specials. Don't let this offer pass you by. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. More the best for less guarantee.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Yes, you have to check out our forums. In fact, a little bit later, we'll have questions from our forums for David Ferrant, and not necessarily about Highgate. When we get past the Highgate story, we'll go into other stuff. So despite the fact that this was a ghost and not a vampire, people want to call it a vampire.
Yes. Yes, they did. I suppose because a vampire was more romantic, if you like the word, and because quite a few of the people that tried to cash in on this were trying to do it for means of self-publicity. There were so many. There's one person I could mention, actually, because he was in the front page of the local newspaper with a picture of himself, and he was named in the paper. And that was a guy called Barry Edwards. I can't remember the exact month. I think it was in the spring of 1970. He was one of those that tried to cash in, and he said that he was a member of a small cine club called the Hellfire Fire Club or something, and they were making a film on the so-called vampire.
Well, wait a minute. The Hellfire Club, Benjamin Franklin, if I remember correctly, was initiated as a Hellfire member back in, I think, the early 1770s.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry, I wasn't actually talking about the Hellfire Arcades in West Wickham. I'm saying that this is what this group of people called themselves. I don't believe that there was any real connection with the genuine Hellfire group. They were just a sort of a group of mature students who'd gone to Highgate Cemetery to make a film. And he said, no, this figure was really us filming in the cemetery. And it was us. And he got on the front page of the Hampstead and Highgate Express. He was one of the people that tried to cash in on it. Because, of course, when people were reporting the figure, there were no signs of any lights, or there were no sound of any voices, which, had it been a film crew, even a small one, that they would have had to attract that sort of attention to themselves. And I said at the time, it's extremely unlikely that the people making that film, if indeed they were making it even at the same time as the sightings, it could be anything to do with the genuine sightings which have been sort of witnessed by local people. As I said, he was one of the, or rather his group, was one of the small groups that tried to cash in on it and, well, to get publicity for their film, I suppose. Whatever happened to their film, I don't know. But I've just given you one example of people that tried to cash in on it.
Yeah, it kind of goes with the territory. I mean, Dulce here in America would be another example of, an ongoing scenario that's tenuous at best, that people try to attach some new, salacious story or new development in the promulgation or propagation, I think, of a myth. It becomes a snowball rolling down a hill, and it's kind of hard to separate the wheat from the chaff or the signal from the noise, as we try to do here around the Paracast. But one of the things that I'm interested in is the actual geography of the region. What are we looking at geologically here? First of all, how big is, the Highgate Cemetery and the region around it where these reports seem to be centered? What are we talking about? Is it about a quarter square mile, half a square mile?
I think we're probably talking about a quarter of a square mile.
Very kind of targeted area that we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing it could be slightly bigger than that. But Highgate Cemetery was originally opened in 1838, and it was built on the grounds. There was an old manor house there called Ashworth Manor. And Highgate Cemetery, as it is now, it was all sort of built on a very gradual hill, but Highgate Cemetery, where the graves are now, used to be part of the gardens of this old manor house. The house was demolished, and a church was built. I think St. Michael's Church was built about the same time as the demolition, which is now stands at the back of Highgate Cemetery. But originally, Highgate Cemetery used to be on the grounds of this ancient manor house, which has long since been demolished.
What kind of historical data do we have about the manor house, the lineage or family that occupied that property? Are there any sort of hints that might suggest something, that old that might be at work or, somehow responsible for the aberration? Or do you think the aberration is something that has sprung up after the cemetery was put in the garden area?
I feel personally that I'm not an historian, but I do know there are names on record. I might be, please don't quote me, I think it was Lord Ashworth, and I think the house was named after him. And there were stories, legends around that time, that the actual manor house itself was actually haunted. There's no proof to back that up. I mean, that is the common belief. And this just gave further weight to the stories about Highgate Cemetery itself.
Now, as far as Highgate Cemetery is concerned, is this still a place where people are being buried, or is it just whatever's there is there?
No, I understand that you can still be buried in Highgate Cemetery today. That's if you can afford it.
Oh, this is the upper-class cemetery.
Yeah, yeah. And,
so therefore, this vampire is a rich vampire.
That's what the speculation has always been. You know, he came from an upper-class family. I believe it was in Romania. And the stories went that he was a vampire at the time, and that his followers transported him to England. He landed at Whitby, good old Whitby, up in Yorkshire.
Well, it sounds like Bram Stoker somehow got
exactly
inspired by this particular scenario.
Now, isn't it the legend of Bram Stoker, though, that he wrote Dracula to conceal his own life as someone who was cheating on his wife at night, and therefore was this romantic traveler of the evening who was attractive to women?
I'm not so sure about that, Gene, but I do know for a fact, and it's very probable, Bram Stoker actually mentions Highgate Cemetery, or at least an area in the very close proximity of Highgate Cemetery, in his book Dracula.
It's been a few years since I read Dracula.
Well, it has been since I read it, but I do distinctly remember one of Count Dracula's disciples called Lucy Westerner, or Westerner, who'd become bitten by Dracula, and who herself had now turned into a vampire. And Bram Stoker actually mentions this in his book. At least he mentions Lucy Westerner as one of Count Dracula's disciples, and he actually mentions the area which is almost in the proximity of Highgate Cemetery.
So is that one reason why people might expect to see things there? I'm not trying to suggest that it's all someone's imagination, but...
Yeah, but I'm actually sure that that added fuel to these sightings, whether or not the sightings had anything to do with... Because as I said to you earlier, that a lot of the people that experienced this ghostly figure...
I'll tell you what, we have this sighting to present. With Gene and Chris, with our guest David Ferrant, you're in...
The Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are... The GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Emergency Essentials has Mountain House deals in June. Going on now. Emergency Essentials, the 24-year leader in emergency preparedness supplies, does it again with up to 25% off Mountain House foods. Don't miss these savings. All Mountain House number 10 cans are 20 to 25% off during the month of June only at BePrepared.com. Mountain House foods have superior taste and a scientifically proven 25-year shelf life because they start with fresh or frozen foods, then cook, prepare, and finally, freeze-dry them. All the goodness, flavor, and taste are locked in as if handmade from scratch. Mountain House, the same great meals enjoyed by campers and outdoorsmen the world over. Hurry, now through June 30th. Call 800-999-1863 to experience exceptional customer service and the BePrepared.com low-price guarantee. That's 800-999-1863. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain, not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy to use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkyd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid, proven plant protection, guaranteed or your money back.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
David Ferrant, joining us, psychic investigator from the UK with Gene and Chris. We're talking about the Highgate vampire, or some apparition or whatever seen at the Highgate Cemetery. Now, we're talking about something that happened quite a few years ago, taking us to the present. Are still things being reported there that are strange?
Yes. The last known sighting that came to my attention was in 2005. In fact, there were two in that year by two completely different people. One was a lady who was driving up Swains Lane quite late at night. She was coming up from Archway toward Highgate Village. And as she drove up, obviously it was dark because the headlights were on, but it was a summer's night. And she saw in the distance what she thought was a sort of a branch of a tree, and she thought a big tree branch had sort of fallen over the wall. And as she got closer and closer, she realized that the headlights, when it got lit up in her headlights, she realized she was sort of seeing a figure that was just standing motionless against the wall, and she'd just mistaken it to be a tree branch. When she looked back in the mirror, the figure just all disappeared. And only a couple of months after that, another person who I was in contact with personally, and he only came to see me a few weeks ago now, he used to live on the Holly Lodge estate, which actually backs onto Highgate Cemetery, right at the very on the bottom end of it, going down the hill. And where he lived, he could actually look out of his bathroom window at night and he could actually see Highgate Cemetery. And anyway, he used to walk up and down Swains Lane quite regularly. And he was coming back from Highgate Village on his way home. And he wasn't really unperturbed. He wasn't in that much of a hurry, but he had a young wife waiting for him, and they'd not long had a little baby girl, and he wanted to get back. And that's all he was really thinking about. And as he was coming down from the top of Swains Lane, he saw in the distance, I should explain here, there's two gates of Highgate Cemetery. There's the main, I was referring to the top gate, which is where I had the sighting. And this person was walking down from the top gate and down the hill. And about a 5-minute walk after that, you have the main gates of the West Cemetery. And on your left, you have the main gates of the Eastern Cemetery, which is a lot more modern. Well, that's the one where Karl Marx is buried, but it attracts a lot of tourists for that reason. And he saw in the distance a figure standing motionless outside the gates of the Eastern Cemetery. Just standing, he didn't take much notice of it. Except as he was on foot, as he got closer and closer, he realised that he hadn't even seen this figure move. And he thought, well, that's funny. If it's a tramp or if it's someone standing there or somebody homeless, it should be moving. And as he approached it, he began to get a bit apprehensive. He couldn't really explain why, except there was just something in the atmosphere, if you like. He just felt very, very uneasy. And he decided not to look at the person directly, but sort of carry on walking past it. He was in the middle of the road. He noticed it was sort of dressed in sort of Victorian clothing. It was very difficult to discern. It was almost, he wasn't sure if it was a cloak. Believe me, I've questioned him about this. He said he couldn't really make it out. But he did, it seemed to have some sort of half hood hiding its face. And this is the frightening thing. He said that as he walked by it, he was walking by this person or whatever it was on his left. He felt a voice in his ear, as though somebody whispered in his ear, "Good evening, sir." And it really sort of frightened him because he realized that the thing was about 10 feet away from him. And he heard this voice right in his ear. And he carried on walking really, really quickly because he wanted to get to the turn into the Holly Lodge estate, which was just, well, a couple of hundred yards down on the right. And he didn't look back. As he just turned to go into the drive of the road that led to his house on the estate, he turned around and he looked up the lane and he saw the figure still standing outside the eastern gate of the new cemetery. And he said, as he watched, it literally glided across the road. It seemed to, it was in the distance, but it went straight towards the main gate. There was no other way, and these gates were locked in the Western Cemetery. And he said, it just appeared to disappear straight through the main gate of Highgate Cemetery. Now, this was in 2000, I believe it was in July 2006. So there you have another example of a sighting that's comparatively recent. As these things go, anyway. So the answer is that it's still being cited by local people. Yes.
Now, this one thing I wanted to maybe get into here, going back to the beginning. Obviously, we have an ongoing mystery: the Highgate Vampire, what it could be. But what first attracted you, David Ferrant, to this sort of research?
Well, I'll have to go back in time to answer that for you. And I'll have to be really quick, Gene, because I think it was the involvement of my mother, who used to attend the spiritualist church. She attended one in Kentish Town, which is quite near Highgate, and she attended one in North Finchley. And I could remember I was very, very young. Well, when I say young, I wasn't a baby, but I was 8, 9, 10. But I used to be aware that she used to attend the church, and I was also aware that she used to come back very late at night. Well, I say comparatively late, 11 o'clock. I think she used to go out in the evening about 8. And after the meetings in the church had finished, she used to go back to other members, other people's houses for coffee and all this sort of thing. As you know, the Spiritualist Church, it does believe in communication with spirits, if you like, spirits of the dead even, and that people, the public, can receive messages from them. But I do remember she used to come in on occasion quite late at night after attending these meetings, and it used to cause a lot of conflict between her and my father.
So your father was a pretty straightforward kind of gentleman.
He was. He was a very good man. He was a company director, and
he's a conservative businessman. And the missus is into ghosts and spiritual things and stuff.
Well, she was certainly into the spiritualist church, and I felt a lot closer to my mother. And I used to becoming aware, as I grew older, of these arguments between her and my father. I wasn't eavesdropping, but I couldn't. I was born in a very old Victorian house in Highgate, and it was virtually empty at that time, as these houses were then. And it wasn't on the main road, and sounds used to carry at night, but I was definitely aware of them arguing, and I knew what it was about. It was because she'd been to the meetings in the spiritualist church. The whole point of that is, just to really answer your question quickly, if anything, I got involved because of my influence, rather, by the involvement of my mother. And it's true that that particular house that I was born in, the old Victorian house, was actually haunted. And my father, I used to tell my parents about it when it used to happen, not very often, but I used to see a figure in the front room. And he just used to put it down to bad dreams or having a nightmare or something like that. My mother was very understanding. She always used to, out of earshot of my father, or when he'd gone off to his business, his work or his meetings or whatever, she used to sort of explain to me, no, you might not have been dreaming, but these things can't hurt you if you really understand them. They don't really want to hurt you. And she completely took a much more sympathetic approach. And I think it was through her and her involvement, even at that young age, that I was sort of enticed, if you like, or influenced into belief in the unknown, the supernatural, things beyond the material world.
And this started you on a quest that began when you were 15 years of age. And this is even more fascinating. We'll get into that in a moment. Let's take a few seconds to pull this off. If you want to get in touch with us, there are several ways. One is to write us, news@thepowercast.com. Once again, that's news. @thepowercast.com, on Twitter, we are The Powercast, @thepowercast on Twitter, if you want to send us a tweet, or check our forums, forum.thepowercast.com, forum.thepowercast.com. David Farron joining Gene and Chris, which means you're in
The Powercast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Would it save you time to get the best quality water filters and the best quality storable foods from one company? You bet it would, and now you can at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Big Berkey water filter products and great-tasting, long-lasting, storable, wise foods are both now available on one website, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Wise foods, ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches and come with a 25-year shelf life. Big Berkey water filters are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. Combine Berkey water filters with Wise foods for an unbeatable preparedness combination. Get free shipping on every order over $50. And GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit Big, BERKEY, waterfilters.com. Or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Or go to BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for relief. What can MDS Forte do for you? MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps with weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte by calling 213-405-5355, 213-405-5355, or visit bestbloodsupport.com. That's bestbloodsupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
Hello, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Oh, yes. With Gene and Chris, we have David Ferrant. We're talking about his quest to learn about psychic phenomena that started when he was a young person, young whippersnapper, taking, I guess, a trip across Europe when he was 15. I wish I could have done that. I'm jealous. So what did you do? You left school?
I better explain something really quickly. When I was 13, my mother died. I was away at boarding school, and I think that's when I really experienced a very, very big change in my life, because it's almost as if most of my life had been taken away from me. I felt isolated. I had no one to turn to. My father was only interested in good education. I had to try and pass exams. He wanted me to follow in his footsteps. And I just was not interested in material learning. I rebelled at school, especially after my mother had died, because I had no reason to do otherwise then. And I literally refused to learn anything. I hated maths. I hated algebra, geometry, and all the rest of it. In fact, the only subject that I came top of the class of, was scripture. I know that might sound funny, but it's because I had a great interest, a deep interest in stories in the Bible and the truth as I saw it that was concealed in the Bible. But anyway, after that, yes, I got expelled from two schools, and the last one was when I was 15 years old, because in those days you could leave school at 15.
I know the feeling. I got kicked out of a couple myself.
Oh, okay. I don't feel so alone then.
All right, so you got expelled. Why? Because you were disobedient, wouldn't pay attention to your studies? What?
Because I was considered a bad influence on the other pupils. Because I was in those days, and bear in mind, I'm talking about 1961. I think the climax came was when I just refused to get my hair cut. I was going to a private school in Weymouth, which my father was paying a lot of money for. But this was in the days when, I know it's hard to imagine now, people just did not have long hair.
Before the Beatles, frankly.
It was 2 years before that. And my God, if your hair even came over your collar in those days, it was short back and sides. That was the norm. You stared at it in the street, at least, and 2 years before the Rolling Stones. And I just hated the system, and I wanted to let my hair grow as part of this rebellion, and I refused to get it cut. And so they wrote to my father and said, you'll have to remove him from the school. And as well as that, we were making dates. There was a girls' comprehensive school just down about 50 yards down the road. It wasn't a boarding school, but it was a day school. And we were always rushing down to the big field at the end of the private school and leaning on the gates and trying to make dates with all the girls as they come out from their day classes.
This is at 15 years old. You've got a good start.
Yeah, but I've got a good excuse too, because I was only 14 or 15 myself. And that's it. That was a bad influence on the other girl, on the other boys, and all this stuff spread like wildfire. I mean, as gossip, that it wasn't long before the teachers got to hear about it, because boys gossip, you know, they hear people talking. And anyway, I left school, so I went abroad. I was working on the boats near Weymouth, and I went to France, and I was working my way through France, any jobs I could get, and I went down to right down to the south of Italy, Sicily. I ended up getting a job in Sicily. I was just doing anything I could find. Now, the funny thing is, this was all before I was 21, and I had a large inheritance to come into when I was 21, but that was some years in the future. My father didn't approve, and I couldn't really write home and ask him for any money, so I was having to literally work my way, picking pears, picking grapes, washing up dishes in French cafes, and I wasn't even very good at the language, and all that sort of thing. So I worked around Europe before I eventually came back to England. So I know it's a bit of a long, drawn-out answer, but that's basically what happened. Yeah, I got expelled, went abroad, travelled around, worked, and then came back to England. And it was then that I looked up. My father wasn't very pleased. He didn't approve. He wanted me to get a job and look respectable and settle down and get all this nonsense about Paris, the paranormal out my head. And, of course, I was too sort of headstrong. It was too deeply inherent in me by this time. Perhaps even aided by my mother's death, I just didn't care. I felt so close to her, and I wasn't going to listen to people that were sceptical or scoffed at what I was trying to do. I sought out...
What were you trying to do? That brings up a really interesting point. What was the, you know, your compulsion? What were you trying to accomplish? Besides, you know, rebellion and, you know, sort of embodying the spirit of the times. I mean, you know, the mid-60s were amazingly turbulent times. Things were happening. What was your motivation? What was your goal?
I just didn't know. That's the whole point. I was basically trying to follow instinctively, trying to find out more about what my mother had been involved in. And she'd been involved in the spiritualist church, and there were still a lot of people. She was young when she died. She was only 35. And a lot of people were still alive, and I looked them up, and I went to see them, and I started to become involved with them, and I was trying to find out more about what she'd been pursuing, and I did. And I eventually got involved with people who actually lived, or one lady lived in Barnet, who were involved in Wicca. Now, Wicca is the correct name for witchcraft. Do you remember I said to you at the beginning of the program, I said I really hate the word witchcraft?
I knew people years ago who practiced various Wiccan religions.
I was just basically what I am trying to say is that I just decided to seek out friends of my mother's, and I eventually met a lady in Barnet who was heavily involved in Wicca. And as I just said, I hate the word witchcraft because it conjures up in people's minds black magic, Satanism.
Exactly.
Well, these are earth worshippers. I knew people involved in different Wiccan movements, quite a number of years ago, and they were just lovely people, and no, they weren't casting spells against people. That was the worst of what anybody could possibly do.
The Christian church has done a good job in stamping out all sort of ritualistic practices based on nature.
Well, yes, the Christian church, the early Christian church, did an excellent job of sort of annihilating that old religion, which was really only a religion based on fertility, which I was later to sort of get an understanding of. It was a fertility religion based on the powers of nature, the powers of understanding ourselves, the human psyche, healing, helping people. But it was nothing to do with any sort of black magical activities.
It's called symbiosis. You know, humanity is kind of a flower within this reality, within a closed system called Earth. And nature, Gaia, the mother, if you will, really does have a lot more to do with what is going on with humans than I think modern science would care to admit or even acknowledge that it's possible.
Yes. Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And I found all this out very, very gradually. And I realized it was a very, very deep sort of understanding. Okay, they had two... it's misunderstood nowadays because in Wicca they have a female deity who's the mother goddess, obviously, and they have a male deity. He's symbolized by the sun, the solar deity. More importance, if anything, it's not as if they're two separate deities. It's just that in Wicca, they believe that it's just two aspects of the same deity, male and female.
Yeah, symbiosis.
Yeah. And I was to find all that out. And, well, you know, I mean, it's a historical fact that when the early church tried to annihilate Wicca, as they did in the Middle Ages, they destroyed all its customs, they destroyed all its practices, and they not only tried to destroy them, they actually stole them. For example, I might be telling you the obvious, because you seem to know a lot about it. In Wicca, the mistletoe and holly were symbolic of everlasting life, being evergreens. It's only symbolic. And they were taken over by the Christian church and used in the rituals to celebrate Christmas, the fir tree, the Christmas tree. And later on, we had the Easter egg, which was used in Wicca, which was only a fertility symbol.
We've basically assumed in the Christian world some of these rituals from the pagan religions. David Farron joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24-7. You heard me right. Every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.